Name something that gets passed around.
A joint.
A joint.
Now, streaming live on the Marijuana Agenda.
Oh, gnarly. What are you people? On dope?
It's time for Toker Talk Radio.
Hey, this is great, man.
The voice of the marijuana nation.
Marijuana is listed as a Schedule I drug. That is absurd.
Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ. That's 650-534-2565.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
Hey, man. Am I driving okay?
Toker Talk Radio is your chance to make your voice heard in the marijuana nation.
They're walking on their pants with their cap on backwards, listening to the Enema Man and Snoopy Snoopy Poop Dog.
Send that message with clarity that good people don't smoke marijuana.
Now let's get to joking and talking with your host, Russ Belville.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Time for Toker Talk Radio, and we're continuing on this rant about Philando Castile. Answer some questions from the chat room. One question, can't they appeal? No, you can't appeal an innocent verdict. That's double jeopardy. There's that. You can appeal a guilty verdict. You can appeal it multiple times all the way to the Supreme Court. You can have as many chances as you want. Or I shouldn't say that. You have a lot of chances to appeal a guilty verdict. But a not guilty verdict is final. The minute it is pronounced, not guilty verdict is final. Officer Yanez could come forth today and say, you know what, I just hated black guys and I decided to shoot him for the hell of it. Because it's fun. And it wouldn't make a damn bit of difference because you could not charge him after he's been found not guilty. OJ could say right now, hey, I killed Nicole. I did it. I killed Nicole and Ron. Nobody could prosecute him for that. Once you're innocent, you're innocent. There is no double jeopardy. That's our constitutional right. However, to answer another question or a statement from John Thomas, a civil suit? Yeah, there is a civil suit proceeding. And this is one of those wrongful death kind of civil suit situations, I believe, where the bar is a lot lower. In a criminal case, you've got to prove beyond a reasonable doubt. Like, beyond a reasonable doubt, this cop acted improperly. And apparently the jury found there was enough reasonable doubt. Of course, the jury wasn't informed of the statements of Officer Yanez after the killing. They only got to hear him say he saw a gun, which he did not see. But the civil suit is a preponderance of the evidence. It's a lower bar to clear. You just have to say it's more likely than not that this cop acted improperly. So there is a civil suit involved here. And then sometimes these cases will get a federal civil rights suit that will be applied, that the officer was, you know, violating this man's right to life, basically his civil rights, based on a protected class situation, like, you know, racism, anti-gay, stuff like that. So it has yet to be seen. And complicating this for some people is the idea that Yanez is Hispanic and Castile's black. So it's not the typical white cop, black motorist situation. Still, I don't think that precludes moving forward on some sort of federal civil rights case. For me, I'm just, Jacob Sullum out at reason.com has got a great article out right now about, you know, the NRA being absent on this, because this should scare the hell out of any lawful gun owner, because Philando Castile did everything right. He did what he was supposed to do. As a lawful concealed carry permit holder, it is your duty to inform law enforcement officers during an encounter that you are armed. And he did so. And he did it in a polite manner. He did, sir, I have to inform you that I'm carrying a firearm. Right? The way that Yanez talks about this in his testimony, talking to those special agents, I should say, not his testimony, but his interview, makes it sound as if Castile was some gun-slinging gangbanger out there. Kind of got to hold the gun sideways at you and stuff, right? There's none of that. None of that's the case. A lawful concealed carry permit holder who did his, who even the officer, even Yanez said when he first came up to the car, Castile had his hands visible, had his hands up, you know, left arm on the steering wheel and had his hands visible. What does a black guy got to do in this country to not get shot by a cop? Hands up doesn't work. behave doesn't work. Don't do nothing. Comply. Doesn't matter what you do. If the cop feels he's scared, and for some reason they're always scared of black guys, they've got the go ahead to go ahead and just shoot to kill. Shoot first, ask questions later. It's just a travesty. And the travesty is magnified by the prosecution failing to bring this transcript up in the introductory phase of the trial to get this introduced as evidence. That, to me, is prosecutorial malpractice, that they weren't able to get the evidence in of him describing to these special they held the evidence. What they did is they didn't introduce it first, and then they wanted to introduce it during the cross-examination phase of the trial, figuring, aha, now we'll be able to trip this guy up because he said he saw a gun in his hand, and now we've got this evidence where he's talking about, I couldn't see the gun. But the judge wouldn't allow it. Now, I'm still trying to follow up on that, why the judge wouldn't allow it. Makes no sense to me. The other thing that bothers me about this story is the dash cam footage not being released to the public until now, after the verdict. Now, the cops, they want to try to do that. They're trying to pass laws across the country, trying to restrict our access to dash cam footage, to the body cam footage, because they know how bad it makes them look in the court of public opinion, and they fear that it taints the jury pool. We'll talk more about this after the break.
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Looking for the 420 friendliest way to visit beautiful legal Potland, Oregon?
I'm Lori Duckworth, inviting you to come stay with us at Delta 9 House and Studios.
You get your own private room with queen bed and access to our high-speed Wi-Fi, premium entertainment system, and more.
We'll even cook you breakfast. Look us up on Facebook at Delta 9 House.
That's facebook.com/Delta9House.
Delta 9 House is booked through Airbnb.com, City of Portland, permit number 17-159855.
And now, another episode of Cannabis Shakespearean Theatre. I'm your host, Leonard Pinth-Garnell III. Tonight we revel in the hilarity of acquiring cannabis when miscommunication occurs between the cannabis delivery service and the consumer. The Royal Shakespearean Cannabis Theatre Company presents the classic David's Not Present piece, made famous by Richard Merrin and Thomas Chong. Enjoy.
Hark. Who goes there?
It is I, David. Pray grant me immediate passage, good sir. I come bearing a package of great import.
Hark! Who goes there?
It is I, David, as I previously informed you. Make haste in unlatching this portal, for I believe the constable hath cast his visage upon me. I bring you the package you seek.
'Tis David?
Affirmative, my good man. 'Tis David. Now open this door forthwith.
David's not present.
For Cannabis Shakespearean Theatre, I'm Leonard Pinth-Garnell III.
The Marijuana Agenda. Like the liberal agenda, but with profits. Ka-ching.
I'm Russ Belville from The Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 4 weeks for the Celebrity Marijuana Zone with Steve Bloom from CelebStoner.com. Learn more at MJAgenda.com/about.
It's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation. Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ.
Welcome back, everyone. We're still talking about the case of Philando Castile, lawful gun owner, shot and killed because, well, he's a black guy with a wide nose and long hair that may or may not be in cornrows or may or may not be in dreadlocks or may or may not be straight. And he is of some height and some weight and therefore had to be killed. Yeah, this is just it shocks the senses, this story. And as more details come out about it, there's just more and more angles that are infuriating about it. And to me, the latest angle that bothers me is the release of this dash cam footage that was held until after the trial. Now, I know defense attorney advocates and people will say that this sort of footage should be withheld because it can give the wrong impression to the public. It can taint the jury pool. These cops deserve a defense, yada, yada, yada. I call bullshit on this. As far as I'm concerned, not only should we have access to the dash cam footage, access to the body cam footage, we should have that in real time. Cops should be outfitted with live webcams. The technology exists for this. Live webcams of what they're up to. Now, obviously, not cops that are doing undercover stuff. And you know, there's ways we could moderate this for certain situations. But in general, what is wrong with having the public's eyes on our public servants as transparently as possible? These cops are always saying, you don't understand, man. Our job is so hard. We have such a tough job. All right. Broadcast it. Put it up online. Let us see it. Let us see your day-to-day operations. Let's see what you guys have to go through. Let's just see how tough it is. Let's just get that out there. You got nothing to hide. What's the problem? What's wrong with putting this footage up online? To withhold this footage, and cops now are lobbying for laws across the country that restrict the public's access. Journalists, people doing Freedom of Information Act requests, restricts their access to these dash cam and these body cam footages. And this is just wrong. We need more transparency here, not more opacity. Furthermore, you got to wonder just how much of this testimony by Yanez, where his line about, well, Castile had the audacity to smoke marijuana around a kid in his car, so who knows what he thought of me, what kind of care he'd have for me. Does Yanez know anybody that smokes pot? Has Yanez seen any of the research on people that smoke pot tend to be more mellow? Has he heard a stoner joke in the past 40 years? Has he seen a Cheech and Chong movie? I mean, it's just insane to think that if you smell marijuana, uh-oh, must be a criminal. But I'm telling you, like I said in the rant, for Yanez, it was just three strikes and you're out. Oh, you're a black guy, and we recently had a black guy commit a violent crime, and you say you have a gun on you, and I smell marijuana. Well, obviously, you must be a gun-toting, drug-dealing, lunatic thug who's driving around town with your girlfriend and four-year-old daughter, and you politely inform the cops that you have a gun before you intend to shoot them. Weird kind of criminals they got going there in Minnesota. Real polite. I understand the people in Minnesota are very polite. Maybe that's it. Maybe that's it. Yanez is just used to polite criminals. Maybe that's the situation going on. So there's going to be a civil suit, and you've got African-American activists and people that just care about people wondering what has to happen here. There's nothing unlawful. I mean, if the cops are going to be that skittish, that somebody who's a lawful gun owner is someone they can be afraid of enough to shoot on such little provocation. And again, no provocation from Castile, but the provocation of, well, he's a black guy and there was a robbery with a black guy who had a gun. And well, you know how marijuana is, it's drugs and drugs are violent. If that's all it takes, the smell of pot and matching a description, God help me. If the description goes out that there's an overweight, bald, white guy who committed a strong arm robbery, all points bulletin, middle aged, bald, white guy with a goatee, wanted in the shooting during a robbery, that could be me, right? Oh, wait, I forgot, I'm white, so in that case, I'd probably be alive. If I were carrying, lawfully carrying a weapon, and told the officer about it, I'd still probably be alive. Even though I'd smell like pot, trust me. And also you have to ask, like, what is it about our cops these days, their training, their perceptions, that leads them to go right for the gun, that leads them to think they're going to be killed at any moment? Now, there's been a lot of documentaries and a lot of reports that I've seen recently showing how these cops are trained, and there's this particular training that basically scares the hell out of them and makes them paranoid at all times. You never know when that next stop is going to be the one where they shoot and kill you. You never know. Violence is all around you. Around every corner, there's violence. These cops get trained to think that they are a target 24 hours a day. Anybody they pull over is the next person who could shoot and kill them. When, in fact, you look at the law enforcement officers killed and assaulted, that's LEOCA, it's an FBI database, you look at LEOCA over the past 30 years and you find nothing but a precipitous decline in the killing of police officers. You find the rate has gone dramatically down. You find that police officer doesn't even make the top 10 most dangerous professions in this country. It's somewhere around 16th or 17th. You're more likely to die on an Alaskan fishing boat or logging in Montana than you are to be a cop in Minnesota. But these cops have been trained to think, well, anybody at any time could be killing me. And any moves they make, they could have a gun and they could be shooting and killing me. So I have to reach for my gun and kill them. And here's a radical proposal. You know, sometimes people are like, well, you know, that's the way it is here in America. We have a Second Amendment and everybody can have a gun. And so therefore the cops do have to be worried because anybody could have a gun. Here's an idea. How about we take the guns away from the cops? I know that sounds crazy, doesn't it? Take the guns away from the cops, but think about it for a second. What if we took the guns away from the cops? Would more of them get shot and killed? Or would more of them employ de-escalation techniques? Would more of them employ less than lethal techniques like tasers? It's an open question. I think there is some room to think that that would be the case. It's just despicable what's going on in this country. And it feels like report after report, year after year, as it gets worse and worse, we just find ourselves becoming more and more divided. It's enough to make you think there's elements that want it to be this way, want us to maintain this racial stratification, keep all the poor people fighting amongst each other. They're less likely to notice the rich people ripping them off. That's somewhat of what's going on here, too. And you got to question this officer's judgment when his reaction to a guy saying he has a firearm on him and reaching around to unbuckle his seatbelt so he can reach into his back pocket and get his wallet to produce the ID that he was ordered to produce. If that was such a terrifying thing, why is it that Officer Yanez didn't de-escalate the situation in the first place? Because number one, here's something to consider. When a cop smells marijuana coming from your car, oftentimes they pull you out of the car. Could you step outside of the car, please? Because at the point where they smell marijuana, the criminal violation of the law with respect to a controlled substance is a greater offense than the traffic violation of having an equipment error, having a broken taillight. Remember, Castile was pulled over. The pretext was a broken taillight. But the real reason he got pulled over is because he matched the description. He was a black guy driving a car. Black guy with long hair, wide nose, driving a car. Must be a criminal. Aha! Broken taillight. I have a reason to pull him over. Then he smells the marijuana and decides that, oh, well, there's marijuana. Must be a terrible, terrible person.
Oh, God, I thought that was absolutely dreadful.
All right, well, this sound means that it's time for our union-mandated safety briefing, and I really need to relax a little after going over this news today. Smoke 'em if you got 'em. We'll be right back with more stories from the wide world of weed when we return.
If you work in the cannabis industry, consume marijuana, or just support freedom, you need to know about breaking policy news that affects you. Marijuana Moment is the daily newsletter that helps you stay on top of all the latest and most important state, federal, and international cannabis developments. Brought to you by longtime legalization activist Tom Angel, Marijuana Moment puts a concise yet comprehensive overview of cannabis news in your inbox early every weekday morning. Wake up to Marijuana Moment and rest assured you'll be ready for the cannabis news that's driving the day. Subscribe now at marijuanamoment.net.
It's time for Cannabis Facts about Teen Drug Use from Robert Platschorn's thesilvertour.org. This message is supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com. A recent survey by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control indicates that in states that have legalized medical marijuana, the rate of marijuana consumption among high school students has not increased. In fact, in legal states like Colorado, teen use has actually decreased significantly. It's simply no longer a big deal for teenagers in legal states. This was Cannabis Facts from thesilvertour.org, an educational nonprofit supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com.
The Marijuana Agenda, like the gay agenda, only with better music.
I'm Russ Belville from The Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 4 weeks for the UK Cannabis Chronicle from the UK Cannabis Social Clubs. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
I have a package here for Radical Rick. Is there a Radical Rick here? How about a Rick Russ? Any Rick Russ? Somebody named Freddie Barack has sent him a package? Anybody? What is that? Sounds like a skunk.
It's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation. Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ.
Welcome back. Checking out the chat room. Glad to see so many of the regulars out there today. And a quick note, PDX is the abbreviation for the Portland International Airport, PDX. And then informally, PDX is used just to say Portland. It's kind of a Portland abbreviation. So, sorry, I have to catch up on my union mandated safety briefing. I was a little busy during the break there. Hope you'll excuse me. Much better. All right. So I want to cover this other story. I got to get away from the Philando Castile story for my own blood pressure. But I want to get to the story from Marijuana Policy Project, which has been banking at PNC Bank ever since it was founded in 1995. 22 years. Marijuana Policy Project has had bank accounts at PNC Bank. They have just been informed that as of July 7th, PNC Bank will be closing their accounts permanently. Now, why? Well, according to the PNC people, they say, as a federally regulated financial institution, PNC complies with all applicable federal laws and regulations. They told me, this is Nick Field from MPP, says, quote, they told me it is too risky. The bank can't assume the risk, end quote. And the justification they give is that Marijuana Policy Project gets donations from companies in the marijuana field. So your company in Colorado or Washington or Oregon takes some of its profit and donates it to MPP, the banks are positing that that is basically money laundering. That MPP is somehow money laundering and these banks could be subject to prosecution. Now, no bank has ever been prosecuted for this, for dealing with an ancillary in the marijuana industry. This is, now, we've told many stories of dispensaries and grow shops and people that are in plant-touching industries, plant-touching businesses, being denied their banking accounts. That's an ongoing story. And it's a little easier to understand because, you know, marijuana is federally illegal. And if you're profiting from selling something federally illegal, then, you know, you can understand why the feds would have a problem with that. But this is not people that are touching the plant. This isn't even people that are supplying supplies that help manufacture, traffic, or sell the plant. This is like a third level back. These are cheerleaders. MPP is a policy organization. They're not assisting the marijuana industry in a material way. But for PNC Bank, that's too risky because they get some money. Not all. They get a lot of a lot of their funding comes from, you know, very rich people who made their money in all sorts of industries having nothing to do with weed. But because some of their donations come from these businesses in states where it's legal to sell weed, they can't have bank accounts anymore. This is a new level of threat that we're dealing with here, and you can point it all at Jeff Sessions, the Slingblade Hobbit. It's all about this threat that's out there, this uncertainty, because the whole marijuana industry to this point has been moving forward basically on a, you sure kind of basis, right? Where business would open up and they'd look to see, well, is anybody busting us? Is this okay? Can we do this? Because the federal government's not saying that it's okay. In fact, they're saying it's illegal, but they're not going after him. And then once we got the Cole memo that said, look, if you behave yourself, we won't come after you. That allowed the industry to progress a little farther. Like, oh, okay, we could go ahead and do this. Yeah, we can go ahead and have these businesses. But now you get a chilling effect with the installation of the Keebler Gump, Jeff Sessions, who wants to prosecute in every way he can possibly do so. He wants to prosecute. Now these banks are going, well, shit, I don't want to be the first target on Jeff Sessions' radar. And they're dropping MPP. And you have to wonder if behind the scenes, this wasn't PNC Bank making a decision. This was the feds. Maybe a regulator from FinCEN, maybe somebody directed by the Sessions Department of Justice makes a little phone call to PNC Bank. Says, that's a nice bank you got there. Be a shame if anything happened to it. Because you know the feds want to take down the pro-marijuana groups. They audit the shit out of them. I mean, MPP's been audited numerous times. Normal's been audited numerous times. Yearly audits, according to Field over at MPP. They're 501c3s and 501c4s. They get audited yearly. They post their Form 990s on the web. They're the most transparent drug organization you could possibly imagine that doesn't even touch a drug in any way. So you'd think if there were a list of ancillaries to go after, and you were doing so based on the threat that they were actually criminal money laundering institutions, MPP wouldn't be the top one on your list. Normal would not be the top one on your list. But if you look at it from the perspective of, hey, we want to take down some of these organizations that are being so successful in changing people's minds, so successful in lobbying, so successful at getting under our skin with op-eds and with pointed questions at press conferences and these reports they keep putting out. If that's your goal, Well then shit, MPP, DPA, normal, Americans for Safe Access, those would be at the top of your list. And don't think MPP is going to be the only one. Wait till the rest of these organizations start getting their little letters from the banks. Now, I think there could be a silver lining in this. And that silver lining could be legislators, congressmen, senators, even Republicans, or maybe especially Republicans, who don't look too kindly on these kind of extortive influences from the federal government over commerce. You get some of the libertarian-leaning Republicans in on this, where they say, now hold on. These are groups that are engaged in First Amendment-protected speech. This is a chilling effect on the First Amendment. This is a political move to try to shut down or impede someone or some organization based on its political views. Remember how a few years back, righties were freaking out over the Obama administration's IRS categorizing and cataloging the applications for 501c3s and 501c4s based on if they were conservative or liberal? Remember that big brouhaha that was a big nothing burger? Well, where are they now? This is the same thing, right? This is the federal government's financial regulators, not the IRS this time, but another group, FinCEN, whoever, we don't know. But this is pressure, I believe, pressure from the federal government upon these banks to undermine the First Amendment rights of these advocacy groups. I truly believe that's what's going on here. I don't think it's any accident that they're going after MPP in this. Now, if you want to know more about this, we're going to have an interview with Mason DeVert from Marijuana Policy Project. That'll be coming up next week on our Marijuana Policy Insider. That happens on every other Monday. So we'll get to learn a little bit more about that from Mason, I'm sure. All right, as we wrap up this segment, a couple of other quick news stories to cover in the world of marijuana. There was a major data breach at MJ Freeway. Marijuana Business Daily is reporting this. MJ Freeway, they're based out of Denver. They provide software for the cannabis sector, a lot of the seed-to-sale stuff, point-of-sale stuff. Well, they're saying that some of their source code information was posted illegally online last week. They say it's a theft of data. And this follows a hacking incident in January when MJ Freeway's point-of-sale system got hacked, and that was a major crash, and hundreds of dispensaries and pot shops were offline during that crash. It was up for about 4 days, this source code information, and it's been reported to Colorado authorities as a theft. So it's something we have to consider. MJ Freeway is not just out here west. They've landed the Pennsylvania contract for their medical marijuana program for seed-to-sale tracking. And there's just a few of these companies that are offering these type of software services. And we're starting to learn through the Russia scandal and through other news stories that this cybersecurity is very serious. And so long as we're still talking about something that's federally illegal, that need for cybersecurity is even greater. We've got the risk of already these banks shutting down MPP accounts. The last thing we need is more of this access, more of these data breaches putting us at risk in the cannabis community. So I don't know what's going on with MJ Freeway. I certainly hope they get this taken care of. Maybe hire a cybersecurity firm to fix this, right? Let's just accept that this is part of the growing pains. A lot of these companies are startups, and as we're becoming bigger by leaps and bounds, we become bigger targets. And now marijuana is becoming enough of a lucrative target for hackers out there that we need to step up, increase the cybersecurity. All right, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, We'll talk a little bit about Martha Stewart and Snoop Dogg. I don't know if you've seen their potluck show. It's awesome. Check it out on VH1. Also, we got some more data to bring to you about border crossings and the smuggling of drugs that Trump's wall is never going to stop. Stay tuned. We're back right after this.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
New beginner guitars and banjos are often constructed much better than ones built before your time. Why struggle? Get a new instrument or fix the old one. The trusted professionals at the Fingerboard Extension will evaluate your instrument for free. Repairs are priced for people who work for a living. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
And now, in the interest of fair and balanced journalism, the Marijuana Agenda presents this anti-drug public service announcement.
And here comes Chris Hill, 4 feet six out of Jefferson Elementary, a confident young man with a great stride, but uh-oh, he might be in trouble now.
Hey, Chris, want to get high? No way, man. That stuff's for losers.
Oh, what a move! Chris Hill never hesitates, just blows past that guy, Bob.
You're right, Mike. Look, Chris is known for his great head shake. Then he shifts his weight to the right foot, finds a hole, and zip, he's out of there.
Spectacular, just spectacular. This kid's got a bright future.
To combat this sort of reefer madness, listen to the Marijuana Agenda every weekday at mjagenda.com.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
It's like I picked the wrong week to quit smoking.
Learn more at mjagenda.com.
I'm Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 4 weeks for our Government at Work, the latest in cannabis reform at the local, state, federal, and international level. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
As pirates, we go on vacation to North Dakota, you know, because they've got a town called Argusville. What are you smoking there, boy?
It's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation. Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ.
Welcome back, everybody. Glad to have you here. Just finishing up a tweet, so excuse me while I type a little bit, but my apologies there. Got a little cough today. I don't know what that could be from. Anyway, going back to the news, some non-drug war news. There's the special election happened in Georgia yesterday. Tom Price, who's a vehement opponent of medical marijuana, was appointed to be the Health and Human Services Secretary under Donald Trump. He was the Republican congressman from the 6th District in Georgia, a district that has been a Republican district since 1979, where Republicans often win by 20 or 30 point margins if they're opposed at all. But this time around, in the special election to fill that seat vacated by the HHS secretary, the Democrats ran a 30-year-old political newbie who didn't live in the district and had numerous videos of him cosplaying Star Wars against a white Republican woman with the typical GOP values. I use that term loosely. And the Democrats were all excited about this because the polls were showing he was neck and neck with this woman, and it was so close, and so they spent a god ton of money on both sides. It turned out to be the most expensive House race ever because Democrats pinned all their hopes on it as being a referendum on Donald Trump. And if Ossoff could win this, the Democrat could win this, it would bode poorly for Donald Trump leading into the 2018 midterms, where he could possibly lose the House. And it would cause House Republicans to abandon Trump and yada, yada, yada. Pinned all their hopes on it. And they lost. For the fourth time, the Democrats have lost one of these special elections. Remember, the previous special election was the Democrats running an absolute political newbie who was a folk singer and lost to a guy who body slammed a journalist on tape the day before the election. So I don't know who could we run next, Democrats. Try and find some winners out there. I don't know what to do. I don't know what to tell them, but I can tell you one thing. Continuing to do what you've been continuing to do and expecting different results is the very definition of insanity. And this leads me to a piece that's up on CNN right now. Some House Democrats say it's time for Pelosi to go. Now, part of the campaign in Georgia kept pinning John Ossoff to San Francisco liberal Nancy Pelosi. San Francisco liberal Nancy Pelosi. And you got to start asking yourself, gee, is a 77-year-old female San Francisco liberal a good leader for our party or a devastatingly easy target for a GOP attack ad? And you know, I'd have a different attitude if, you know, Pelosi was the leader, was the House, you know, Speaker of the House again. But I remember last time she was Speaker of the House and Obama had an entire Democratic House and Senate that we got the Affordable Care Act. That was great, but we didn't see that translate into continued wins. We have this every now and then the Democrats win for a couple of years and boom, they sink again. And it's because partially Democrats have no clue about messaging. They have no clue about why people vote the way they do. Democrats continue to keep thinking that, well, if we just show people that we are the party that has their best interests and we have the best policies that'll do the most for them, then people will vote for us. That's like saying if you show the marijuana statistics to Jeff Sessions, he's going to change his mind. No. Why does Jeff Sessions hate pot? Because pot is evil, because the people who smoke pot are no good hippie liberal criminals. Has nothing to do with fact, science, reason, or logic. And the same thing applies to why people vote Democratic or Republican in this country. Has very little to do with, well, you know, I was looking at their platform and I found that the Democrats said, no, has a lot to do with they're us. They think and feel the way we do. They share our values. So down in an election in Georgia, in a red district, you got a 30-year-old Star Wars cosplayer and tied to a leader of a party who's an elderly San Francisco liberal. And do you think the average Georgian going out to vote looks at the 30-year-old wet behind the ears kid with no political experience and his leader being an elderly liberal from San Francisco? And do you think the average Georgian goes, yes, they think like I do. They believe as I do. We share the same common goals. We saw this all throughout the election, too. It's like what Donald Trump tapped into in winning the Rust Belt had a lot to do with affirming traditional, good old-fashioned American values. You know, family and work and we're America's great and all of this. Democrats come out and tell you what their policy is going to be. Oh, we have a 15-point plan that'll do this and this and this, this. Instead of coming out and actually calling things as people see them, right? And part of the problem of this is the Democrats have become too entrenched with big money itself to be able to criticize big money. And big money is the big problem in our politics at this point. They're too corrupted at this point to be able to call it out. Less corrupted than the Republicans. I don't know. You know, is it corrupt when you openly say that's what you're doing? Like, if that's your public stated goal is to be the party for the rich, then I don't know that it's necessarily corrupt, right? It's just evil. But Democrats don't do a good job of translating this into values. I mean, Trump came around and talked about coal jobs, right? We're going to bring back coal jobs. Coal. What is really talking about had to do with, we're going to bring back the time when you, the good, hardworking American who puts your hands on the tools and gets the calluses and breaks the sweat and does a backbreaking job, you're going to get greatly rewarded for that, just like the old days, and be able to take care of your family and have the American dream of going on vacations every year and buying a new car. And we're going to bring that back. That's what that whole Make America Great Again was. Aside from the Make America White part, aside from the implied racism of it, take that apart for a second. But the real Make America Great thing was all about bringing back the way it was, or the way we thought it was, or what we thought it should be with respect to the American dream. Bring back the middle class. Bring back the idea of a person who works hard can get ahead and have a nice life. That's what he tapped into. But what was the response from Democrats throughout the campaign?
Donald Trump is a terrible, terrible man who says awful sexist things and curses.
To those Midwesterners who work in the coal mines and the steel mills and these hard jobs, that's half of them. That's them going, well, yeah, I've said some sexist shit. I've cursed at times. When they tried to point out what a terrible, awful man Donald Trump was, they were inadvertently indicting a lot of the people that were watching that ad. It was just as bad as Hillary saying they're a basket of deplorables. Half of them are a basket of deplorables. They're below us. They're beneath us. They're terrible people. Gee, I wonder why they lost. What the Democrats could have done, had they read some George Lakoff, had they understood how people vote and why they choose to vote certain ways, they could have used that to their advantage. They could have turned to those coal miners and said, Donald Trump wants you to think he's bringing back coal jobs, but what he's really bringing back is profits for the coal operators. He's a soft-handed ivory tower New York elite who's never worked a hard day in his life. He got a silver spoon handed to him by his daddy, right? Undercut his masculinity. Democrats refuse to play hardball. They refuse to kick people in the nuts and punch them in the mouth. And that's what you got, metaphorically. That's what you got to do in politics. They should have been hammering away at Donald Trump being an effete, weak loser, and tapped into winning, tapped into people's feelings of wanting to be better. And they had the background to do it. They had the Affordable Care Act. The first time we'd actually move forward in helping people get health care. Again, you're a hardworking American. You work 40 hours a week and put in time on the weekends to help your kids. But Republicans in Congress want your kids to go without health care. They talked about Obamacare's death panels, but the real death panels are the insurance companies that would deny your child because of their pre-existing condition. You get my point? You get my drift how this could have worked? Right? Hammer away at that. Tie Republicans to the rich. Call a spade a spade. Just be honest about what you see and what you believe. But Democrats keep running from that. They keep running from what they believe, which, when you look at the polls, is the popular position of the majority on nearly every issue you poll. The only issue I can think of where the Democratic position is not the majority position is the death penalty. Other, you know, if you assume the Democratic position is to eliminate it. Let's call it liberal position, because I don't know if it's an actual political plank, but people, by and large, agree with livable wage, universal health care, free college tuition. People agree with these things that Bernie Sanders was pointing out, these very, very radical progressive ideas. But they won't believe them if nobody steps forward and champions them and says, I believe this and it's good. If it's just, oh, well, you know, $15 minimum wage is something we really ought to work for. But gosh, at this time, gee, we should really move slowly and only go to 12. If you're mealy mouth about it, no one's going to want to get behind that. Are the Republicans ever mealy mouthed about what they want to do? No, they come right out and do it and will hypocritically lie in your face about why.
Well, I can't believe that you get that Mitch McConnell who can't believe that they would obstruct Neil Gorsuch when, gosh, every justice deserves an up and down vote.
When just a year prior, he was refusing to have an up and down vote on Merrick Garland come hell or high water for no reason whatsoever. Time for Democrats to start playing that level of hardball. All right, enough of politics. We'll get back to weed right after this break.
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Hey, everybody, it's Russ Belville from The Marijuana Agenda, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
And now, in the interest of fair and balanced journalism, The Marijuana Agenda presents this anti-drug public service announcement.
Some people start slumming as a social thing, you know? I probably wouldn't do it by myself.
That was mine.
Slumming stands for sticking leeches on myself.
Leeches?
Yeah, leeches.
I don't get it. I've had to confiscate all this. It's a problem.
It's like you hear people talking about slumming over the weekend.
It's hard not to get into it.
To combat this sort of reefer madness, listen to The Marijuana Agenda every weekday at mjagenda.com.
The Marijuana Agenda. Like the pharmaceutical agenda, without all the side effects, overdose, deaths, you know, insurance.
Side effects may include nausea, dry mouth, and constipation. Dry mouth, constipation, indigestion, and abdominal pain.
Which can occur without warning and may cause death.
I'm Russ Belleville with the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 4 weeks for Cultivator's Corner with Jorge Cervantes from MarijuanaGrowing.com. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
Pot 2.0.
It's not your father's Woodstock weed.
It's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation. Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ.
Welcome back, everyone. As we close up shop here, a couple of other quick stories. Martha Stewart is reported on in AOL Entertainment. This just in, AOL still exists. So on AOL Entertainment, we're talking about Martha Stewart and her partnership with Snoop Dogg, who, you know, showed up on her show, Martha Stewart Living, and the two of them got along so well, they're friends, and they now have a show on VH1 that's called Martha and Snoop's Potluck Dinner Party. And I saw an episode of this that featured Wiz Khalifa and Seth Rogen, and it was delightful. Oh, who else was on? Ice Cube as well. So it was just delightful. I can't recommend this show highly enough. And believe me, I do things most things highly. But this was a wonderful show. Martha Stewart is just dynamite. And of course, Snoop is always wonderful. They got it set up too, where they were doing a fried chicken cook-off. Which one of them could cook a better fried chicken? And they have their little, you know, staged prop kitchens that they've got. I mean, I guess they're real kitchens, real fridges and everything, but you know, it's all decorated. It's all set decorated, right? And so it was a half and half kind of thing where Martha Stewart's half is all this beautiful New England style, very dainty looking, typical Martha Stewart kitchen. And then the other side, you had Snoop's kitchen, which is all just like decked out, you know, bachelor pad, you know, cool neon lighting going on. And then when you opened Martha's fridge, it would play like this classical music. And if you opened Snoop's fridge, it would play this great hip hop beat. I mean, just, the show is amazing. I just love it. It's my new favorite show. And of course, they talk a lot about marijuana on this, but they're not actually smoking marijuana or eating marijuana. But there is a lot of marijuana reference on the show. Hell, you got Wiz Khalifa, Ice Cube, and Seth Rogen. Between the three of them and Snoop Dogg, you got about 35% of all the marijuana that's been smoked in the past year, right? that's a pretty heavy-hitting celebrity smoke fest. And come on, we know that Martha's token, right? We know Martha's token. Martha, come on. Come on out and just say it, man. We know it. We love Martha Stewart. So I love that show. I just wanted to recommend it if you hadn't heard about it. It's on VH1. Please check it out. Also, as we wrap things up today, a little bit extra data coming from addictions.com. It's a report on drug arrests crossing the border. And so what they found out in these in this report was the top 10 areas for drug arrests as you cross the border, and it's Arizona. Mostly in Arizona, they're talking about this, and particularly the Douglas, Arizona point of entry. Now, of these top 10 areas for border crossing drug arrests, the top five are all Arizona. Top five drug arrests, all Arizona. And then Arizona lands another one in the top 10. It's like number 9. And then other ports of entry, 3 in Texas. You'd expect that, right? And then 1 in Massachusetts. Yeah, Springfield, Massachusetts port of entry was number, 7. Number 7 on the list. Interesting. And of the people being busted crossing the border, they find that 57.55% is marijuana. Percentage of total drug arrests by drug. This is 2012 through 2017. So 57.5% was marijuana, 15% heroin, 14% cocaine, 8% meth. Everything else is below 1%. Oxycontin, steroids, cot, opium, etc. That's something we already knew. You know, most busts are going to be for marijuana. But what they're finding are fewer and fewer marijuana arrests happening, but a pretty steady number of arrests for all the rest of the drugs. So, you know, the theory here would be that marijuana legalization is causing this reduction in marijuana arrests and less trafficking of marijuana across the border. Fewer and fewer seizures, pointing to what we have always argued, that legalizing marijuana, while it doesn't eliminate a black market, it doesn't make the cartels go away, but it takes a significant chunk of their business. We can never argue that marijuana is going to end the black market. We can argue that why give criminals any more market than we can? I've never understood that argument that, well, if we legalize marijuana, there'll still be black market dealers. So let's keep them all black market dealers. That makes no sense at all. Hey, you want to end black market dealers? I'll tell you how you do it. Make what they do legal. Make a small dealer license that someone pays $50 a month to get that allows them to deal dime bags to people, and they're no longer illegal, and you're making money on it. Imagine that.
Follow MJ Agenda on Facebook, Pinterest, Instagram, YouTube, and follow MJ Agenda Show on Twitter.
Learn more at MJAgenda.com.
That's all the time we got for today. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Thanks. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
You take a scene, you plan it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a scene, you plan it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.